When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I just thought it was Wednesday. Bad Street, Leonard J.
Hey, I'm ready. All right, foot back.
Begins with a U and ends with an A. Has a meal dish out there.
Monday Night Raw, number one.
All right. Welcome, everyone, to the Cultaholic Classic Raw Review. As the other Cultaholic lads continue to ponder life without wrestling fans. Literally, we are here via our Ica Pro powered DeLorean pondering life without wrestling fans, metaphorically. Nobody's watching. And who be we? I be fake Geordie, radio presenter without portfolio, former Cultaholic heavyweight champion, the proprietor of Isolation Station 24601, Mr. Tom Campbell. I am here with the pair in the big blue parkade, the head pen of Cultaholic, socially distancing across a pond. And if you were to hand him a pencil, do you know what he would do? He would say, first of all, one, is this your second trip out of the house today? If so, you are breaking quite a few codes in doing so. 20 months, one bit of exercise per day. And two, don't even need this. You've made this journey unnecessarily. This is an unnecessary, non-essential journey because I don't need a pencil because I use a pen because I get it right every time. His name is Justin Henry and he is off of America.
How are you doing today, Tommy?
I'm in good form today, considering that April essentially didn't happen. I'm doing all right.
It's the Seinfeld of months.
It is, isn't it? It's the Seinfeld of months. Not the month when nothing happened.
Mm-hmm. What is shocking. The deal with the coronavirus?
What is the deal with social distancing? I want to socially distance all the time.
And then Kramer comes in anyway.
No, oh, you're supposed to social distance.
I can't do that, Jerry.
I can't be doing that, Jerry. Exactly. More importantly, how are you, Justin Henry?
I'm doing fine. My routine hasn't changed very much. It's mostly the same.
Yeah, you've said this previously. Like your lifestyle is still very much based around like working in front of a desk. You know, the cat doesn't go. Does your cat go out anyway?
No, cat stays in.
Cat stays in. The cat's no different. Does the cat notice that you're there more?
Not really. He tends to just nap on the pillows next in the chair next to my on my workstation. So. So usually he's asleep anyway.
They do sleep a lot, don't they, cats? That was our concern when we first got Pablo, was that we thought he might be broken or like he needs rebooting. Because he's sleeping a lot. But cats just sleep a lot, don't they?
Well, yeah, because, you know, they're bored and that's how they stay, you know, sleek and vital.
If only that was how we all worked, so it'd be fine.
They sleep 16 hours a day and then rub your head against someone for 5 hours a day and eat the other three and watch TV somewhere in there, which my cat does.
I was going to say, this is the diary of Justin Henry we're getting here, aren't we?
I know. I envy him.
One thing that your cat can't do, one thing that Pablo certainly can't do, is jump in an Ica Pro powered DeLorean and go back, way back to 1994 to watch some old episodes of Monday Night Raw. I envy cats.
Yeah. I was here to say, There's stuff that Harley can do that I can't do that I wish I could do.
Yes, that and lick your own bowels. So the episode this week, where and when are we for the Classic Raw review, Justin Henry?
Well, this is quite a predicament because the air date here is Monday, September 12th, 1994. We are 2 weeks after SummerSlam. But this was taped well before SummerSlam on August 15th.
So why would it have been taped so far ahead? Do you know the answer to this?
Because they're actually on tour of Europe at this point, and they were just getting all these shows into the can. Anyone go live again until September 26th. Mm-hmm. So next week's show will have been in the can for 5 weeks.
It's going to stink as well, isn't it?
Oh, it most certainly is.
So in a short while... Oh, go on, my friend.
I was going to say this show is very significant because... while they're over on tour of Europe right now, in particular Germany, a certain somebody is wrestling their final WWF match on Tuesday of this week.
On tour in the for the this is the Heart Attack tour, isn't it?
I believe it is. The Massive Coronary Tour.
I think I know who it is. I've got when we get to it a bit later on, I've got a rundown of the Heart Attack Tour that we're going to get to. I've got the card from the San Jose show that you and I are going to confabulate over. We're going to talk about.
Confabulate. I've never heard that word.
John, can you look that word up for me? Anyway, but at this particular point in time, before we get into this week's episode of Raw, this is where I like to sort of paint the picture of what's been happening before I hand over to Justin Henry to talk us through the episode. But there was two major wrestling tours currently happening at the same time. We had the Heart Attack Tour for the WWF, and we had WCW's Hulkamania Tour.
Yes, I believe they are also over in the continent of Europe at this point.
They certainly were. So I've got the card here from the Wembley Arena show. Now, not to be confused with Wembley Stadium, all right? So nobody say, oh,
two very different buildings.
They are very different buildings. And also, one is the stadium, the other's an arena. I mean, it's great to play Wembley anyway. Progress Wrestling played Wembley Arena a year or so ago, and it was a very important moment in their history. But this is how the card shakes down. I've got the card here, sir, for the Wembley Arena show for the WCW Hulkamania Tour. Do you want me to run you down the card, okay, Justin Henry?
Please.
So, stop me when this feels like a WWF show from the 90s, or from the late 80s, rather. Jim Duggan beats Diamond Dallas Page. No doubt.
Okay, so far so good.
Pretty Wonderful, Paul Orndorff and Paul Roma, the Pauls, they should have been called, defeat Dave and Kevin Sullivan.
Okay.
Lord Steven Regal defeats Flying Brian.
That sounds awesome.
I imagine there's another possible match tonight competitor coming up. It's not this one, by the way. The Nasty Boys, Brian Knobbs and Jerry Sags, defeat Stars and Stripes, Marcus Alexander Bagwell and the Patriots.
Hey, that could have been good. You don't know.
No. Sting defeats Steve Austin. That would have been a good one.
Unless they were half-assing because there was no cameras.
Maybe. Vader defeating the Guardian Angel, a.k.a. the Big Boss Man, dressed slightly differently.
Now, in fairness, that could have been a really good match.
That could have been a good one, actually, to be fair. Like, two big boys battering each other.
Yeah, Vader plus super heavyweight who hits as hard as he does equals good.
And at the top of the show, it was Hulk Hogan defeating Ric Flair with sensuous Sherry in his corner. For the WCW World title.
All told, that is not a bad-looking card.
2,000 people came to watch that show at Wembley Arena. Just around 2,000. So what I'm going to do right now, off the top of my head, I want to pull up Progress Wrestling, because Progress played Wembley a year or so ago, and it was a big deal, because it was headlined by Volta and Tyler Bate. And here we go. Hello, Wembley. Progress. They packed in 4,750 fans. So double what they did.
So what we're saying is that Walter is more of a Space Mountain than Flair is?
Walter is Das Space Mountainist, if you will. Mm. Would you go
John,
and see that card?
John, oh, John? Nature Walter. Nature Walter.
Thank you, John. Would you go see that card?
If it was, I assume we're talking the WCW one?
Yeah.
I would. I mean, Flair versus Sting. I mean, Austin versus Sting, Flair versus Hogan. Even Vader versus Guardian Angel sounds like it'd be a lot of fun to watch. Regal Pillman, hell yeah, that's four matches right there to justify me going.
So WCW on tour in Europe, playing to 2,000 people at Wembley Arena. There was another iconic wrestling building that they nearly got their mitts on this week. Do you know what that might be?
Are we referring to, wait, are we doing Europe still?
No. This is a show closer to home for you in the U.S.
Oh, because I believe I may have done a war stories on this one.
What do you reckon it is?
Would this be something that rhymes with Dadison Cher Harden?
That's right. This is the time where WCW played Bladison Blair Bladen. This is from the Observer. This is fascinating. I had no idea about this. I know you guys talked about this on War Stories as well, so I was like, whoa, this is amazing. From the Observer, this past week, Madison Square Garden cancelled the WCW show scheduled for the 26th of November, and the WWF will be getting the date instead. So they're gutted because they were going to headline this with Hogan and Flair for WCW in MSG. After the Garden, which is in the midst of a bit of an ownership change at this point, initially gave WCW the date, apparently the WWF got wind of it and produced a contract which stated they had a right of first refusal on any wrestling dates in the main arena, and we're exercising that right now. This may be premature. There was a lot of speculation within WCW that they would attempt to book the Meadowlands and run head-to-head with that date in New York. But we will see a bit on that down the road. There's also talk of a lawsuit, but I don't think anything comes of that. This is just kind of the contract the WWF has drawn up with the Garden that they weren't aware of.
Yeah, because the whole ownership changed. Whoever approved it at the time was unaware of the WWF's right of first refusal, and amid all the confusion, when WWF realized what was going on, then, as you just said, they were able to go, no way, and they got the date for themselves. And it actually turns out to be a pretty relevant show when WWF runs it, because a certain title change will take place that will have far-reaching implications for the company's future.
And just think, it could have been a dub-si-dub show. Imagine such a thing. Movement in the other company, the major promotion in the wrestling sphere at this point in America, as ECW is now ECW. The E is now not for Eastern, it is for Extreme, as we are getting some of the fallout still from the great NWA turncoat that is Eastern Championship Wrestling.
Yeah, so Shane Douglas threw down the NWA title upon winning it on August 27th. Cutting the stirring promo about the relevance of the belt, how he wished his father could have seen him win it. And this actually bleeds into the Botchamania meme, where they dub in Shane Douglas' line talking about the Harley races, the Barry Windhams, to the Ric Flairs before the Mongo line. Never mind that. Bleep, here comes Mongo. which is one of my favorite things Matthew's ever done in any 13 or 14 years he's been doing Botchamania. Yes, it was a huge double cross where NWA's Dennis Corleone got blindsided by Shane and Paul Heyman, basically standing on their neck to create the foundation of Extreme Championship Wrestling. Can you imagine if that happened today? We'd have Paul Heyman feuding with Billy Corgan.
Oh, could you imagine? That'd be wild.
All times Corgan went to ECW shows back in the day. In fact, almost bought ECW in 2000.
I remember That's hearing about this. He's been keen for decades to get into the wrestling malarkey, and it's nice to see him with a stronghold. Now through the NWA.
Of all things, the ones Heyman once effed over.
The one noteworthy thing this week in regards to the fallout from the Eastern / Extreme Championship Wrestling debacle is the day before this episode of Raw airs, Shane Douglas and Paulie Dangerously are appearing on radio shows. They clearly haven't spoke to each other because Shane Douglas goes on to say, onto his show to say, "Oh, I just, to spur of the moment, decided to throw the belt down." Whereas Paul Heyman on the show that he's on, which is the John Arizi show, says, "Oh, no, we planned this for months."
That's why you get your story straight.
Exactly. Well done, lads. Well done. We haven't had any episodes of Raw for a couple of weeks in this timeline, but they have been taping a whole batch of stuff for WWF Wrestling Challenge. And there were 2 days of tapings on the 30th and the 31st of August. A few highlights from that include Ted DiBiase and Tatanka doing promos, Tatanka wearing a suit. He's now well and truly sold out. Davey Boy Smith returned to in-ring action, and King Kong Bundy re-debuted, managed by Ted DiBiase, rounding out the weird island of misfit toys known as the Million Dollar Corporation.
Everything old is new again.
Also on both nights, the dark match main event for both of the tapings was Undertaker and Yokozuna in a casket match. Basically the same match played out twice. The difference in dark match main events from night one to night two was that night one, Bret and Razor Ramon teamed up to face Owen Hart and Jim Neidhart. And on the second night, Razor Ramon faced Owen Hart, and Bret Hart defended the WWF title against Jim Neidhart. So it's worth remembering that Jim Neidhart got a title shot in this particular era.
Not on a lot of house shows, as we're going to find out.
Were they a house show run together, will we find out?
Unfortunately.
Oh. Want to throw in one more little bit of love, is the birth of a future AEW star this week.
Really?
Yes, indeed. As it is come to the attention of Dave Meltzer and the wrestling community that Kip Sopp has welcomed his son Austin into the world.
Oh, you mean in 94? I'm like, wait, huh?
Oh, no, in 94. Mate, we're in the DeLorean, aren't we? We're back in time.
I'm like, wait a minute, was his son born again? Is this like a weird embryo thing?
Yeah. John? Make what you will with that.
I'm sure. I'm only halfway through my coffee here. I don't know what the hell you were talking about. Like, oh, it's 94. Okay. Okay, now it makes sense.
So back in 94, Billy Gunn, a.k.a. Kip Sopp, had a son born named Austin. Billy Gunn was off the road for a couple of days, replaced by Well Done in house shows. Just to... fun little nod, which I think was a tribute. Do you?
Yes. Yes, it was the Smoking Duns. they were in their thong singlets with the cowboy hats and carrying the six shooters and his Lincolns. Are we in a wrestling show or what is this?
Oh, and flipping heck, I forgot to throw this in. Right, this week. It was the 3rd of September. This was 3rd of September. In All Japan, Steve Williams retains the Triple Crown of Budokan Hall, beating Kenta Kobashi in 41 minutes and 23 seconds.
I wonder how many times they landed on their heads in that match.
Oh, I want to see that. Have you seen it?
I have not seen that match in particular, but I may have seen highlights based on all the people who put up every head drop from All Japan imaginable in GIF form on Twitter. You just go through your timeline like a news story. Oh, look, Akira Taue just had his neck broken in six places off of a backdrop driver.
Just another day at the office.
Well, I have a little story for you now, Tommy.
Ooh, hit me with your best shot.
See, the show we're about to review here, it aired on September 12th of 94, but on September 13th, a certain someone wrestled their final match in the company across the pond. And that man is Macho Man Randy Savage.
Oh.
Now, can you guess what city Savage's final WWF match took place in?
So,
Should I hum the Jeopardy theme? Would that help?
It definitely wasn't San Jose, because I'm looking at the card for that right now, and he ain't nowhere on it.
I said across the pond.
Oh, sorry, across my pond. Right, across your pond. Okay. Sweden. Switzerland.
Rostock, Germany.
Oh, Germany. Das Macho.
But, I mean, not just... Yeah. Not just Germany, but Rostock, Germany. I never even heard of Rostock until I saw this result.
Is that, like, the name of, like, that backwater part of New York where they always do tapings from?
That looks like the yellow bird that followed Snoopy.
I feel like Rostock was one of those places where if WWE were going to do a pay-per-view from there at this era, they'd have said, "We're live in the heartland of Germany!"
We're live in schnitzel country.
That's pretty more accurate of what they would have done.
Here was that Rostock card. IRS beat the 1-2-3 Kid. Mm-hmm. Women's champion Alundra Blaze beat Bull Nakano. Mabel pinned Bam Bam Bigelow. Undertaker beat Crush in a casket match. Crush subbed for Yokozuna. And notes here that the casket was damaged after the previous night's match and then broke at the end of this match. I wish there was footage of this. Richard Land find footage of this immediately. Jeff Jarrett beat Doink the Clown. Tag champ Shawn Michaels and Diesel beat Intercontinental champ Razor Ramon and Lex Luger via DQ. And your main event, world champion Bret Hart team of Randy Savage to beat Owen Hart and Jim Neidhart.
Whoa!
And that was Savage's final match in the company.
It's just sad to know he's going. But I get why he's going.
But no one knew it was his last match at the time.
How long do we have him on commentary?
Until through the Halloween episode.
Okay, so we got him a little longer.
Yes, a little while longer.
I genuinely feel quite sad about Savage coming to an end on Raw, because I feel like he's been like the linchpin through all of this. Like as much as we've laughed at him, like he's kind of Raw for us.
You mean he defines the show and not in a different manner of what you said there, right?
I know what I meant.
I'm Raw for you too. I don't know what that means.
I don't know what it means.
I'm gonna miss it.
Oh, let's not talk about it yet. Let's wait till it's over.
Let the memories be.
Let the memories be postponed. We'll get sad later on. About Savage, because he doesn't know what it means.
Whoa, Tommy, you can't sing because we have someone else who's going to do that.
Ooh, we do, don't we? Ooh, should we reveal all at the end?
Well, perhaps at the end of the show, we'll unveil our new show friend. How's that sound?
That sounds like you're taking your trousers down. We will unsheathe.
Listen, if you can have Barry the Shark. Anyway, back on topic before we have too much fun here.
Never.
Because we can't have too much fun.
Let's crack on with Raw, matey. What have we got? Talk us through this week's episode of Raw.
Yes, we have 4-week-old matches from Lowell, Massachusetts here. We start out with tennis remarks from Vincent Savage because, you know, the U.S. Open was on the last couple of weeks. But enough of that tennis crap. Here comes some different crap. Tigger versus Quang tonight. Doink and Dink on the King's Court. And new tag champ Shawn and Diesel are in action. We start out with Taker and Quang. And I got to say, even though the heat machine was on and it was playing havoc with the sound, this crowd did not immediately get up for Taker's music because this was August 15th. This is pre-SummerSlam. And they're still thinking, well, this has got to be the faker. The hazards of taping well in advance.
Yeah, there is that a little bit. I like the... This is new Undertaker music, though.
Yes, this is the overture. Not just the funeral dirge anymore.
No, we've got the bridge, which is nice. Big fan of this. Yeah.
The song that he would pretty much have for the majority of the previous 25 years.
This truly feels like the Undertaker that we are going to get until like 96 now. This feels like the Undertaker sort of settled into, like he's grown out of his skin. He's settled into some new skin, which I'm happy to see.
And he's stealing the purple out of solidarity for Men on the Mission for his gloves and his kick pads. So you're thinking this should be a garden variety squash because it's Quang and he's going nowhere. And this is Taker and he's back from the dead in more than one sense. But no, this turned out to be a somewhat even Steven match for a little bit. Quang chops away on him, Taker no sells. Quang spits the red mist into the air, but not in Taker's face. Why? I don't know. He's Taker. Use everything you have to try to kill him. See, this is why I'm going to miss Randy Savage. We get a spot where Taker's on the apron. Quang tries to has him in his clutches. Taker drops down and hot shots him on the top rope as a counter. And Savage says, "Only Undertaker would have that in his arsenal."
No one has ever hot shot.
No one has ever thought to throw their opponent across the top rope in order to save themselves. Yes. Taker hits Skull. It's not old school yet. It's just Skull.
I think at this point it's elementary school. And in about a year or two's time, elementary it'll school. Be college.
Primary school. Vince talked about the Naked Gun cast in the past tense. Good.
Yeah, I'm happy that we're moving away from that.
Yeah, Vince is basically fumigating the show as we speak. Taker goes for a flying nothing. Quang rolls away to avoid it. That was kind of awkward. And then we get a commercial break, and I'm stunned because Quang's still going.
Quang's getting a lot in here. This is a weird decision to make, like to have Undertaker finally dethrone the fake Undertaker, and then have him be competitive. You sure you reestablish him here, have him come out and just batter a guy? But hey, there you go.
But then again, perhaps Taker's looking out for his fellow BSK.
Quang is Sabio. Of course, they're buddies at this point, aren't they? Backstage, not in real life. Well, in real life, not in wrestling life.
Well, yes. Right, Sabio Vega, part of Taker's backstage group, the Bone Street Crew. I believe that was Yokozuna, Godfather, Henry Godwin is not here yet. I think Fatu may have been a part of it, maybe a couple others. But yes, they were called the Bone Street Crew because they played dominoes together, also known as Bones.
Is that where the name comes from? I had no idea.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with like a graveyard or anything, or just anything menacing. It's because they're buddies who played dominoes once in a while. So they became the Bone Street Crew.
I love that so much.
It's so innocent, isn't it?
Because it sounds so intimidating. It's like, do you know what? It's like when you find those hairdressers called Curl Up and Dye. It's like, well, it's a hairdressers. We're dying your hair.
We're changing it up this week. We're playing Candyland. I don't play Candyland with Taker now.
John?
Or Twister or something.
John?
Hours of fun.
Can you please do the box of a board game, and I want whatever board game you like, but it has to be Undertaker and Justin Henry playing.
All right.
There you go. Like Mousetrap, the front cover of Mousetrap, and it's Undertaker and Justin Henry playing Mousetrap.
Taker playing Guess Who? Does it look like I could kill him? Yes. All right, well, that's everyone.
I tell you what, I'd never play Guess Who with Samuel L. Jackson. Does he look like a...
English mother effort, do you speak it?
Keep a comment on the burger I'm eating at 8 o'clock in the morning as a cornerstone of any nutritious breakfast. But anyway. So after commercial break, we are treated to a great moment in which Quang missed the Undertaker with green mist. Taker responds by misting him back.
That was my favorite moment of the match. And I'm just sad that it was done away from the hard cam.
I know. It all seemed like you couldn't tell if Taker was just blowing the mist back somehow or if he had his own glob ready to go.
I assumed that Quang spat the mist at him and Undertaker just wiped it from his face and put some in his mouth and spat it back.
Which I could see happening.
I mean, it's grim.
I mean, if he's Taker Shimp, which was like pea soup, like The Exorcist, and Taker spun his head around.
It got a pop as well, didn't it, when he did it?
Oh, yeah, because it's Undertaker, and him doing anything cool is magnified in coolness because it's him doing it. Quang gets chokeslammed, and that's the finish. No tombstone, just the goozle and the drop.
Done and done. This was a very competitive match for Quang. Like, this could have been a career-defining performance for Quang.
Instead, this is like the height of his run as Quang before he magically becomes Razor's friend in about 8 months.
Yeah, it's sort of the end of him a little bit. He's kind of we're at the peak now of Quangomania.
It's once Hakushi came. Once Hakushi came in, they figured, well, we can't have two of them, and Hakushi's authentic, so let's find something different for Quang / Savio to do. So we get this nice little visual of Vince and Savage at ringside, and the fans are trying to grab Vince while he's narrating. It was like Jericho's old WCW entrance where he leaned on the guardrail and the fans would touch him, except Vince didn't want to do this.
They're just so happy to see him after the trial and everything.
Well, yeah, they're trying to grab souvenirs, and he's like a teen idol, you know. he's like Leif Garrett. Oh, speaking of Vince, quick observer note: this is from the ECW section. They made reference to Todd Gordon, who's the commissioner of ECW at the time, talking about how when Dreamer was screwed out of a match with the Sandman, he came out and says, "We have a real justice system in ECW. This isn't Long Island." I miss when companies were that pithy toward one another.
Oh, they were good times, weren't they?
I miss it. I couldn't imagine someone like Ring of Honor or Impact saying something like that today, because everyone's just doing their own thing. Now, back then, they were a little more cavalier.
The line I always remember as a kid, and we talked about this on the SmackDown review, the Cultaholic Classic SmackDown review the other day. Actually, it might be a couple of weeks ago now. Jesus Christ, it was still when we were still in the office. Oh, halcyon days. It was the line where Triple H was telling everybody that Vince McMahon had joined the X in the run-up to Armageddon 99. And Vince McMahon comes out and says, "I'd rather join WCW than join DX," and it got a booming pop. And I remember as a kid popping for it as well, like, "Oh my God, they said the name of the other company! Like, that's amazing!" Like, when you hear stuff like that now, it's very few and far between.
You got to hear the boos Vince got at Survivor Series the previous year when they were introducing Foley's mystery opponent in the tournament. And the line's actually really clever in hindsight, because Vince talks about, like, because it ended up being Dwayne Gill, obviously. And they're just a guy for Foley to pounce on and be quickly. He's seeking more competition of his caliber. We know what he meant at the time, but that's even funnier now. He jumps ship to the WCW. Crowd just boos it out of the building. It's tremendous. Battle lines were drawn in 98.
They really were. They really, really were.
But think about it, it's Dwayne Gill seeking more competition of his caliber.
I think that's great, isn't it? It's such a great little dig. I love it when they're petty.
And it's going to be appreciated in hindsight when you see who it is. Like, oh, okay, I get it now.
With this one then, so Undertaker wins. And Vince announces on commentary what's next for Undertaker. Is this the first time that we find out?
Find out what?
That the Undertaker is going to face Yokozuna in a casket match in Survivor Series.
I guess they kind of just randomly thrown in there, like no graphic, no. I mean, it is the logical rematch because Taker is getting revenge from beyond the grave, but that's kind of an underwhelming way to bring it up.
It's such an afterthought, and it just seems strange that like you wouldn't get the Undertaker on the mic just to go, "Yokozuna, you will rest in peace." Like, whoa, there you go. Off to the races we go. They don't even do that. It's just Vince McMahon lays it all out on the line immediately.
But you know what will liven it up? It's when a certain guest enforcer comes into the picture for the match.
Oh, be still my beating heart. Be still my beating heart. I can't wait. I know who's coming. We're not going to tell you yet.
Go on Wikipedia if you want to know. Anyway.
Don't do that. It's cheating.
So we get footage of SummerSlam, footage of Bret versus Owen and what's what they're calling the best steel cage match in WWF history. And I might be inclined to agree with that, at least like, in like a non-Hell in a Cell standpoint.
Mate, we watched it and all we did was do impressions of Meltzer and Alvarez. I don't know how true that statement actually is.
Well, I was watching the match while doing the impression because I can multitask. I don't know about you two.
I can both watch a five-star cage match and mock a journalist at the same time, actually.
Well, I mean, I could ride a unicycle while watching All Japan Women. It's not difficult, but I wouldn't quite recommend it. Speaking of women, we can't show violence on Raw against women, so when I heard goes to clothesline Davey Boy and Diana over the rail, we get a freeze frame.
We don't see that incredible bump that Diana took, which I'm sad about.
Yes, we're left to wonder what could have happened next. We just assume that Diana broke her neck and passed away.
She died on the way back to her home planet.
Yes, Diana's poochie.
Whenever anybody's off screen, they'll be asking, "Where's Diana Hart Smith?"
Yes. When are you going to get to the fireworks factory? So, our next match is Jim Neidhart versus Tim McNeeney. And this is the realization that I have that we are transitioning from Owen feuds with Brett to Neidhart feuds with Brett.
Here's where the money is, baby. Whose idea was this? I mean, I say that very prematurely. Like, there is historical justification for this match happening.
Yes, but Neidhart is he's a little gone at this point, in ring wise, and I'm not sure Brett's gonna be the one to keep him on the straight and narrow in terms of having a good match. Because this match right here, Neidhart versus Tim McNeeney. There was like seven different moments where it could have conceivably ended, but it kept going. And on no less than four occasions, they do cutaways to Owen at ringside, trash talking the camera, talking about how Neidhart's going to beat Brett. Owen Hart is carrying this match from the floor. He has to make Neidhart look good from the floor.
I mean, he does.
Well, because Owen's good at what he does.
He's amazing.
But it's just Neidhart just brutalizing McNeeney, hitting a big power move. Dead air. Then Owen, "That's right, Brett, he's going to beat you, Brett." Back in the ring, Neidhart does a body beal. "Yeah, Brett, my brother-in-law, Jim the Anvil Neidhart's going to win the title from you." Back in the ring, here's a wrist lock. And on and on and on and on and on. And that's pretty much this match.
I genuinely think, though, because it's Owen doing these cutaway bits, it's fine. I feel like if this was Bruce doing it, we'd have been on his case so badly.
Well, because one's interesting to listen to.
It's true. There is that. There is that.
It actually hit me. Bruce Hart's existence is like Bart in the episode where Milhouse is Fallout Boy. Like, he wanted the part for himself. And at the end, when you think it's like, "But I know who could be Fallout Boy." And Bruce thinks it's going to be him. And all of a sudden now, it's Mickey Rooney feuding with Brett. Jimmy Jellicker, Jimmy Jellicker.
That is alarmingly accurate.
That's one of the best episodes ever. You're fired. And with good cause.
It's a great episode. I might watch that tonight, actually, on Disney Plus.
Ooh, good plug.
I know. Now sponsored by Disney Plus.
Anyway, Neidhart finishes this poor guy with the camel clutch. He doesn't do the dragon clutch variant, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I was happy to see him do that, because that was
I've seen him do that before, and I thought it would look really nice.
Yes, he's Anvil Key. But unfortunately, not to be seen here. But what will be seen next week on the show, taped only 5 weeks in advance, is Jerry the King Lawler versus Duke the Dumpster Drosy.
Oh, remember that feud? Remember that feud that happened that time? Let's dip back to it, shall we?
Sure, why not?
We've kept it somewhat lukewarm.
Yes, it's warmed over. It's in a steam tray. We put some aluminum foil over it. It's ready to go.
I like the line they use, which is the king versus the duke.
That was good, and Penko actually saying his royal lowness, which sounds biased to me.
He is a bit biased, though, isn't he, old Pettingzoo?
Yeah, it's shut up, Pettingill. Anyway, we show Lawler and the impetus for why Doink and Dink are on King's Court this week, because Dink was making his entrance on Superstars, carrying a bunch of balloons, and Lawler, being a dick, decided to pop all of them. Oh, but that was pretty funny.
Just standard Jerry Lawler being an ass, which is fine.
Did you see the clip someone put up recently of Lawler doing a black mass in 1980?
No. Is that a thing?
Yes, Lawler hit a... It's on Twitter somewhere. Someone put it up. It's Lawler doing a standing spinning heel kick to someone in 1980.
I'm going to find it whilst we're talking, because I want to see Lawler doing black mass. God.
It was one of the toppings on Reddit yesterday. It was tremendous.
Oh, I found it. I've got it. Here it comes.
Oh! No, it's not great.
Amazing. It's like there is somehow less momentum after the spin. Like, that defies physics.
People have been criticizing and saying, it sucked, but you know what? At least he didn't slap his leg and miss.
Well, I'm gonna say black mass, more like black pass. Am I right? Black mass, more like black miss. Am I right?
Well, that'd be Alistair during the Lars Sullivan match.
There you go.
Anyway.
Black mass, more like slack mass. Am I right?
All right, that's better.
We got there in the end. Third time looking.
I'll give you that one. Slack mass. You see, you could have said slack ass. I would have accepted that also.
Black mass, more like slack ass. Am I right?
Here's your cookie.
Tweet me, am I right? Thanks.
So, King's Court with the stupid clowns. Lawler has to apologize to them. What?
It's like it when you just throw shade at Doink like this.
It's the wrong Doink.
Everything about this is garbage and wrong. Like, there is no... What? Like, surely, every character you bring into a company, into a major promotion... Okay, not every single one of them is going to be your top-drawing champ. Your top drawing babyface, your top drawing heel. But you're going to care enough about them to they get over. Like, this is so off the mark. It's just like, he's a clown, and he's a goody clown. An evil clown is phenomenal.
He's Armin Tamzarian, Doink.
Oh, good shout.
Because Matt Bourne is the real Doink the Clown.
Mm-hmm.
But he's no longer here, and all we've gotten in the 10 months since is this watered-down hack version of Doink that's no fun. And he's got a midget sidekick, which is stupid.
Oh, it is a comedy low.
Well, speaking of low, Lawler makes fun of Dink's height. Dink has a Burger King crown on just to really drive home the wit of this segment. But Doink says he has a present for Lawler. And sure enough, two crew members bring out this giant box, which I'm hoping is Abdullah the Butcher, but unfortunately my hopes were dashed.
I mean, that would have been quite... Abdullah the Butcher... Sorry, you're on there.
Jesus, wake up!
Abdullah the Butcher... Abdullah the Butcher in Doink makeup.
Okay, that would be horrifying. Abdullah himself's not horrifying.
Actually, that existed. It was called Pogo the Clown in XPW.
Oh, right. Hey, kid, want a lollipop? That's really a real morbid thing to bring up based on so they bring out this big box. It's not Abdullah. I'm sad. It's a trash can, because you see Duke's gonna beat Lawler next week, says Doink, and Lawler out of spite goes to kick the trash can, but he hurts his own foot because there's weights in it. And not even like dumbbells, like these little like doorstop weights that Lawler's foot would not have hit.
But they're heavy because they wrote 10 tons on them.
Put like a dumbbell in there. Put Dink in there. Lawler hurt his foot kicking Dink.
Actually, Dink being in there would have been funny.
And then we would have got something out of it. See, what could have happened was Dink could have put the trash can in the box, and Dink opens it, and then his face drops and goes, "Ah, we should have put air holes in here."
That's the old gag in it around Christmas time when you wrap up a gift in the shape of a dog.
See, a dog dying is sad, whereas Dink would be a bit less tragic.
Well, that's Dink never slightly coming on tragic. Desert Island Graps, then. That's great.
I can't figure out why I'm chasing away all your guests.
All the big guests I want. I.G. Lee Morgan, Dink. You deny me of them all,
but
mate.
We get Abdullah.
I want to know what Abdullah's three favourite matches are. I think that would just be a podcast which is an hour of screaming.
Here's one where I stab the guy. That narrows it down.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
So the heart attack toy, you want to get some of this, Tommy?
Yes, I certainly do, Minor Freunder. The heart attack tour. So this is the sort of post SummerSlam, let's hit the road type affair. Shows all over the place in the US and in Europe. The video itself, nice bit of CGI, showing a literal heart attack happening. So I can't help but feel that somebody taking the idea of the heart attack tour far too literally and showing an actual heart complete with veins pumping. Flatlining.
I mean, they could have just showed it like a guy eating Cheetos.
That'd
on his
fine.
Like an easy chair, and, like covered in Crisco or something.
What's that guy from the old Raw adverts doing? The one that was married to the hottie. He was going, "Oh, not tonight, I'm watching Raw. Get him in it."
He probably already had a heart attack.
That's probably why he's not in it. Oh, that's a shame. So the Heart Attack Tour is heading around the world. This is the San Jose, California card. I had a little cheeky preview of this earlier on. It's very similar to the card that Justin shared with us, but I'll run it through you. Bob Ollie and the 1-2-3 Kid back as a tag team. They've defeated Well Done, who, as we've said earlier, are subbing for the Smoking Guns at the moment because Billy's off being a dirter. Abe Knuckleball Schwartz defeats Luis Piccoli. This is pre-Rad. The WWF Intercontinental Championship, Razor Ramon defeats Owen Hart. Hart is already competing for the IC title. Diesel and Shawn Michaels defend the WWF tag titles against the Head Shrinkers. They successfully defend them as a result of DQ. Alundra Blaze beats Bull Nakano for the women's title. Brett defeats Jim Neidhart for the WWF title. That big Neidhart push is coming. Keep it coming. And the casket match headlines, which is The Undertaker defeating Yokozuna. There's, as you can see from a lot of the conversation, like they've very much got the motor running in terms of what they're going to be doing post-SummerSlam. We are heading towards Undertaker and Yokozuna on TV, and we're heading towards Bret Hart and Jim Neidhart.
And that, and the crowd for that show was 3,200. A building that could hold at least 17 or 18,000, you would think.
That's a worry.
These are not good crowds here. Not good crowds.
When
the heart attack tour is already
flatlining. In wrestling, where house show business has been through the roof. Is it really just Attitude Era and obviously the Golden Era?
I would say that probably the Bruno era, when the Garden Show, one of the shows that always did well over 20,000. And I mean, it's wrestling's hot. House shows are hot, and this current era, there's no house shows like going on right now, obviously. But when they were going on, they really were in the pits.
I just feel like every time I do a wrestling podcast, regardless of decade, the conversation of house show comes up, and it varies from okay to terrible, to the point where I go, what's the point? Like, but obviously it's almost now, I think doing live events is something that's just always been done. And even though the houses have got less and less over time, because, and I get it as well, I get it more in this era than any other era. I get it in this era because you're not obviously presenting a product that wrestling fans, as few as there are right now, are that interested in seeing, which I get. But like in this modern era, it's like there is so much wrestling to consume. Like, is the really the reaction to Roman Reigns versus Baron Corbin in Poughkeepsie really going to change the fabric of wrestling? It's not, no. Am I really going to be bothered about going? Probably won't. And that's kind of the attitude. And I don't think that will change when all this calms down and we all get back to normal. I genuinely would like to see the company go back to a model a bit like this one, in the sense that they're not on the road doing house shows and live events all the time. They do these sort of big marquee live event tours. I feel like just making them feel more important would help.
Well, it would, and of course, once in a while you have to have a title change somewhere in there in order to justify it. Of course, you know, belts have to mean something again. So there's a lot to unpack there and reconfigure if you're going to make house shows mean something again in 2020 and beyond. But I mean, I'll admit, it's just a fun way to see matches in person and see people up close. And I mean, I get the appeal of it, but most people just view it as a TV product these days. It's people rather watch Disney Plus than Disney on Ice, I guess.
Yeah, it's true. It's sad, but true.
So our next match features a certain important seminal figure in wrestling history. We have Shawn Michaels and Diesel versus future ECW star Tony DeVito and a man by the name of Paul Van Dale.
Okay.
Now, you know who Paul Van Dale is, don't you, Tommy?
Are you going to tell me who Paul Van Dale is?
Well, he is a first-generation wrestler because his daughter would go on to become the first female winner of a Money in the Bank ladder match, Carmella.
James Ellsworth.
Oh, that too.
Oh, so this is Carmella's dad.
Carmella. So Carmella's dad and one of the Baldies from ECW versus the Click.
Oh man, you can't teach that.
And you can't teach that. Anyway.
Okay, so, I like that. A lot of historical significance thrown into this.
One of the funniest covers I've ever seen for something is employed here, because this was taped August 15th, as noted. So Shawn and Diesel are not the tag team champions yet at the time of this taping. That thing comes on the night before SummerSlam. But when this airs, they're supposed to be the champions. but they don't have any belts. So Vince, covering for them, says that Sean sent the belts out to be steam cleaned.
What a line. Of all the things, this is a Vinceism, isn't it? That where, for one, I don't think you could steam clean gold.
I don't suppose you could.
But what we've discovered is that Vince can't be told. Vince can't be told. A true story from Desert Island Graps from this past Wednesday. We had the Beer City Bruiser on from Ring of Honor. Mm-hmm. And we talked about his appearance on WWE TV in 2004 as part of the Simon Dean segment in 2004. Do you remember a Simon Dean segment where he got a guy out of the crowd, got him to take his shirt off, and then the guy pushed Simon Dean over?
I don't recall the specific segment, but I know Simon Dean was doing crowd stuff at that point.
Yeah, well, one of the people that was pulled out of the crowd by Simon Dean was the Beer City Bruiser. He was friends with people who were working that show in some capacity, so he ends up going along, and they end up finding out he's a wrestler, and they use him in this segment. So he goes to have a meeting with Vince McMahon and says, oh, and Vince is like, hey, we're going to get Simon to take your shirt off. You okay taking your shirt off? And he's like, yeah, I'm fine taking my shirt off. Takes his shirt off, and he's got these welts on his chest. He wrestled the night before and got the bejesus chopped out of him by, I think, Chris Candido. So he's got all these welts on his chest. And Vince says, oh, that's even better. We'll say it's gonorrhea. And... And they go, okay, sure.
Keep going.
So they leave the office, and the guy says, don't say it's gonorrhea. And I think it's Michael Hayes who goes, don't say it's gonorrhea. And this Hebrew is like, do we not going to correct him? I said, no, you don't correct Vince. You just don't correct him. Well, say it's gonorrhea!
That's tremendous.
No, it's a proper Vince thing to do, isn't it? It's a proper Vince thing to do.
I just learned that word recently. It's funny.
It's like the Kurt Angle thing with Charmel, where Vince said, I want you to say you're having bestiality sex with her. It's like, well, that's not a thing. That's the word you're using. No, but it doesn't make any sense, Vince. Like... it does to me, and that's all that matters. This...
Well, Angle's so committed that he went out and procured a goat and brought it back and just, you know.
I love it. He basically played hole in the wall with Vince's request and just bent around to get through.
Never doubt Kurt Angle's commitment.
No. So the steam clean thing reminds me of the gonorrhea story from Wednesday. You can listen to the whole thing on the Desert Island Graps podcast from Wednesday. It's on the feed here. But amazing. Amazing. Steam cleaned belts, sure thing.
This is like one long episode of The Emperor's New Clothes with Vince.
It is, isn't it? It is.
Vince, you're naked. No, Vince, no, screw it. Anyway.
That still sounds like it's part of the shtick you were trying to do.
That was Vince on
SmackDown last Friday. Ah, screw it. Turn the lights off. Good night, Padre.
Speaking of tremendous, we get a hilarious spot in this match. It's Sean and DeVito, and Sean is running from Tony DeVito because he's afraid of the baldies, obviously. So they're doing this whole run around ringside, in the ring, out of the ring. Sean's trying to get away from this lunatic jobber. Finally, Sean runs past Diesel on the floor, and Diesel stands like this big brick wall roadblock thing. DeVito stops because it's Diesel, and he's a little more intimidated by Diesel. So while that happens, Sean slides back in the ring and hits this sloppy but somehow still awesome suicide dive onto DeVito while he's being blockaded by Diesel. It's tremendous.
That was great.
That whole sequence was awesome.
Oh, it was so good. Just the pace of it all, and it's just Shawn Michaels just being a dick, which is his best flex.
I missed Shawn in the ring on this show. I know he faced Razor like over a month ago, But Sean adds so much when he's just being Sean.
Absolutely.
So, while all this is going on, and Vince mentions the whole steam clean thing, he should have said fumigate. It would have been funnier because the Headfingers had him before them. See, that I could believe.
No, steam clean! Because they had gonorrhea!
Yes, master. Vince talks about how the heart attack tour is going on in Germany right now. So who's there if they're here? This is like that goddamn episode of Raw from the with the anniversary show, but it's also a show at the Garden going on at the same time. Stan Lance will call and tell who won the tag team title match. Why are there two shows?
I'm sad we didn't get a phone call from Germany.
Guten Tag, it's Stan Lane. You're like Oktoberfest music in the background. It'd be kind of funny, you gotta admit.
Oh, yeah.
Michael Hayes comes in drunk off his ass carrying a stein. Michael, what are you doing at Oktoberfest? What's Oktoberfest?
I just thought it was Wednesday. Bad Street, Atlanta, GA.
I could totally see that, too. So anyway, Van Dale gets in there, Carmella Sr. And Sean hits his neckbreaker that doesn't go well, unfortunately. Kind of sloppy looking. Not so much his part, but Van Dale kind of flew the other way. So Nash gets in there, jackknifes Van Dale. Then he and Sean do the Headshrinker splash with Sean jumping from Diesel's shoulders for the finish. That was a fun squash.
It was alright, wasn't it? It was good fun. Big chance for Diesel. Big love for Diesel.
Oh yeah, chance for Diesel during this match. It's just going to justify the big push he's getting very soon from Superstars this past weekend, where DiBiase called out someone to face Bigelow, you know, anyone who's man enough and all that. And out comes a yellow and blue schemed Atom Bomb, who has now gotten rid of his eerie Doomsday music and has now replaced it with something that sounds like a sped up Moving in Stereo by the Cars. it's Fast Times at 3 Mile Island High.
John?
And despite this crappy change of music, yes, John, if you want to do anything related to Atom Bomb having some pizza and learning about Cuba, I'd be okay with that. Is Atom Bomb is Sean Penn? That'd be something. Just don't do I Am Sam. Please don't do that.
I love Atom Bomb in this era.
Well, he's definitely he stands out because he's one of the few true heavyweights they have that can move.
Mm-hmm. I love him. I think he should have been the guy. I'm gonna put my flag on top of the mast for this. I think Atom Bomb should have had a crack at being the guy. I think he's that good at this point. He's that right. He's got the size. He's got the cool look. He's got as we're going to find out in a minute when he faces Dwayne Gill. My God, he has got the moves. Oh, man.
He had the moves, but I think there was just something missing. I don't know if it was like just... He didn't quite connect with the crowd, though. That was like the one thing. He seemed like... He didn't have that Razor or Diesel kind of magnetism. Where he's like a man of the people in some sense. He seemed like just someone who would just do his stuff and then leave. He didn't quite connect with the people, I don't think. Am I wrong?
I don't know. He got a pop here. He got a pop here when he came out to face Bam Bam.
I mean, he got a pop. I mean, people were... Well, keep in mind, it's also a heat machine. But it's just... He doesn't seem like someone who has a lot of charisma to him. Physical charisma, maybe, but not... Like, could you see him cutting a promo talking about how he's going to face Jeff Jarrett at Madison Square Garden for the title or whatever?
I would have seen him challenge for the WWF title. I'd have given them a big belt. I genuinely would have done. Like, maybe not against Brett, but, like, had... Okay, fantasy booking brain on. Like, Yoko, in his pomp as champ, if Lex couldn't get the job done... Step up Atom Bomb and have Atom Bomb be the guy who takes the belt off Yoko for a bit.
So you're telling me that in the feud with the big Japanese wrestler, you would get the guy whose Titantron video consists of mushroom clouds and have him be the American hero.
I hadn't thought of that. And I want Monsoon to commentate just so we can get the Pearl Harbor line
in. Of course. That's how the feud would start, apparently. Oh, my. That's.
I haven't even thought of that. Oh, no. Oh, I feel bad now. I feel really bad now.
See, and that's why they didn't do that storyline, Tom.
Yeah, I kind of get it now. Bury him.
I mean, to be fair, I just think if you're going to talk about his weight.
Yeah, it's problematic.
But see, it's okay, because Yokozuna's not really from Japan.
And Adam Bomb's not really a bomb.
Wait a minute, Quake's from San Francisco. They had him feud with Earthquake. No!
Oh, no!
What is this company doing?
Being offensive.
So, yeah, Bomb versus Bigelow would have been a pretty good mean guy match, as Brian Alvarez might say. Just two big bulls punching each other and battering each other. And it could have been good times, but I don't know. I guess I don't really recall that feud too much. But here we have Adam Bomb versus Dwayne Gill. One of these men held a belt in the company, and it's not Bomb.
Oh, I knew you were going to say that. I even made a note here. Like, one of these two made at least one belt in the company.
Boy, do you know me.
Oh, I know. I was trying to ponder whether they both held belts at the same time. And I feel like they might have done.
It would have been very close, because I don't think Chronic may have won belt until well after the reign of Goldberg ended.
I'm going to have a quick look, because I didn't... If you carry on talking us through the match, I'm going to investigate this.
Investigate? Okay.
I'm investigating.
Yes. So it's Job Squad versus the New Blood here. And the show how serious they are about Adam Bomb's big push. They're too busy discussing Randy Savage hitting a home run in the charity softball game. Bomb does show off some agility here. He gets the drop down, jumps up for the leapfrog, and then hip tosses Gill on one fluid motion. He's very agile for a man. He's about 6'7", goes about 300. Gill does get some offense in, though. You think this would just be Bomb killing him. But no, he gets a something in the corner that looked very weird and uncoordinated. He wipes out. Bomb goes to the apron, gets the slingshot clothesline, which I don't think was ever properly named. I don't know if you call it a core meltdown or something. That'd have been a good name. Picks Gill up, hits the pump handle version of the Atom Smasher, and wins.
Yeah, I was going to say that the powerbomb, it used to be the Atom Smasher, it used to be the powerbomb. That now is property of Kevin Nash. So no one else is doing powerbombs. Which is fine, which it makes sense. Like, you know, you're going to water down that move if everybody's doing it. And if it's a big deal for Nash, then just take it off and give Bomb something else. Pump handle slam is fine. It's like a pump handle bomb because he goes down with him, which I quite like. Pump handle slam as a finisher, as a standard finisher, would have been a bit weak, but this feels like something special. Or as Savage calls it, he does the old up and over and through. Savage is baffled by the concept of a pump handle power slam. Pump handle slam, rather.
Savage is not the MC Escher of pro wrestling.
He did all the up and the over. Right, John, can you put Randy Savage in that iconic MC Escher painting? The one with all the stairs.
Use your imagination on how that would look, because anything's possible.
There's a train station in the UK, and I'm going to give a big shout to Stour Bridge Junction, right? Stour Bridge Junction, and if you live in the West Midlands, I know you've popped as well. Because the great thing about Stourbridge Junction is it is the MC Escher painting of railway stations. Because I swear to God, I swear to God that I've been up two flights of stairs at Stourbridge Junction and still found myself on ground level with trains going past me. I'm baffled by it. And to this day, I still don't quite know when I'm on which floor, which is the actual ground floor with the exit to the train station, and which is a pretend ground floor. Can't get my head around it. Tweet me if I'm wrong.
So maybe you should be making fun of Savage then.
No, because I'm not a wrestling commentator. When I discovered I am, aren't I? Damn it. Yeah, all right, I won't make fun of him.
Was it showed you.
I'll hand back my equity card if I do.
Well, don't worry, Tom. You have a lot more, you're a lot less ham-handed than this next bit.
Don't know what that means.
We have a new generation ad campaign commercial.
Oh, God. We're at a church. Something else.
And for some reason, the lines are badly dubbed. I have no idea why. So they're in a confession booth, and there's this guy who's admitting to very sinful behavior, such as impure thoughts, lying. He's asking out one of his coworkers, even though she's married. You know, all sorts of adulterous and slanderous things, or scandalous things, I should say, not slanderous. And the minister in the booth next to him is he appears to be goading him on and saying, "What else, my son?" But not in those words. His word choice is very peculiar because it turns out he's not even listening to this dude. He's watching Raw on some sort of portable TV with headphones in. And he's too busy cheering on Lex Luger as he crushes a jobber. and then they end with this exact line. The WWF New Generation, put your faith in us. Does that sound like begging to you?
No, because it just feels like every other half-hearted, half-witted advert for the New Generation era. Just, we need to make some adverts. Oh, God. Vince, what have you got? Oh, Vicar watching the wrestling. Yeah, all right, whatever. Can't question it.
We need to cleanse ourselves of scandal. Let's get in with the church.
Oh, there is that, actually. There is that. Let's... We're scandalous.
Wow.
Let's try and... Let's do something shocking with the church.
Yeah, it's... Maybe we'll try a different avenue there, guys. But... Could you come up with a better slogan than "Put your faith in us"?
Okay, for a religious slant, you could do. But even the vicar saying "unbelievable" is that not somewhat potentially is that not historically blasphemous?
I mean, it could be.
It's something that is impossible to believe in.
The WWF New Generation.
God. Don't have New Generation. Oh, God.
The WWF New Generation. We've been chosen by God.
The WWF New Generation. It's all part of a divine plan. Just don't worry.
The WWF New Generation. We're immaculate.
The WWF New Generation. Because God works in mysterious ways. Here come the bushwhackers.
Yeah, so we go from a new generation ad to two guys in their 40s who lick children.
I mean, last time this happened, where they had a New Generation ad that led into Backlund, Vince was able to kind of explain it away and give the whole, well, this guy has nothing to do with the New Generation, but this time he doesn't
even
try.
He's the antithesis of it.
Yeah, this time he just goes, "Hey, come the bushwhackers, what a great time we're having."
Yeah, yeah. So here comes Arnold Skull in the wrestle.
Oh, I'm glad he's wrestling and not me.
I bet he's more coordinated than I am. You know who likes me? The people of Rostock, Germany. They like me. What the hell is Rostock? It's like a suburb of Oslo. Anyway,
that's where Volta went to watch him and went, "This is going to be my job."
Bushwhackers versus Burt Centeno and Joe Exotic. I wrote that instead of Barry Hardy. I know it's Joe Exotic. Just look at him. I hope Barry Hardy gets booked. I hope he gets booked based on the fact he looks like Joe Exotic. So I did write my notes, "At least they're over." And I meant the Bushwhackers because the crowd is into them. They are very into the Bushwhackers.
Very much so.
More so than Adam Bomb. Maybe that was the litmus test why he didn't get a push. So this match goes on for a bit. Abe Knuckleball Schwartz is on strike. He's in the front row with his sign. Just walking around. And I wrote, "Yup, I'm putting my faith into this."
We're back to Randy Savage movie plugs. He plugs a movie about an uncontrollable bus. I'm thinking, Speed's on TV already? It just came out that summer. But no, it's a TV film called Incident at Deception Ridge, with who Savage calls Ed Bagley Jr. That is the most 1994 WWF plug for anything ever.
It really is. It's that and Silk Stockings.
I miss Silk Stockings. Oh, just, crap. Michael
just you, mate. Just you.
Michael O'Keefe was in the movie. He was Danny Noonan from Caddyshack.
Christ. Jobbing actors. What a killer's row.
It's got a 5.0 on IMDb with 162 votes.
Yeah, but so did
it's got Linda.
I was going to say it's got Linda Pearl. She chose not to.
It's got Linda Pearl. She was on the later seasons of Happy Days.
Oh, really? Oh, well, that's a game changer. Somebody burn me that Blu-ray immediately.
Hang on, I'm going to read the plot real quick. Ray and Dell are professional extortionists who make their living kidnapping rich men's wives for ransom. However, this time, an unhappy marriage turns her plans awry. As they try to salvage the situation and recover their money, a busload of strangers gets in their way. These ordinary passengers are on a trip to Seattle. An ex-con, his sister, an asthmatic kid, and a blind woman prove extraordinarily resourceful when their survival depends upon it. I gotta find this movie.
Oh, mate, this sounds like quite the journey.
I hope Ed Bagley Jr. played the asthmatic kid. So this turns into a really goofy comedy match where Butch counts a pin on both jobbers when Luke covers both men and then licks Hebner. And then the battering ram finishes with the guy who's not Burt Centeno. I mean, who's not Joe Exotic because he pins Burt Centeno.
But Joe Exotic did do wrestling stuff. You know that, don't you?
That's right, he did. Okay. Yeah, he thought the RRH guys were spies sent by Carol Baskin. No, really, he did. Look it up.
I didn't know that. Hang on, Joe Exotic.
2020 has been a hell of a year.
Do you know what? 2020 is one hell of a drug.
It really is. Thanks, Rick James.
God almighty, you're right. How do we miss this in the news? Oh.
Yeah, the hell with the virus. This is a bigger story.
Oh my God. This is amazing. It turns out Joe Exotic, the star of the Tiger King, had loose ties with pro wrestling. Obviously, we know this bit as well. Matt Taven did an interview with ESPN. And it turned out Taven recalled how they had a show in Texas. And the next day, they were in Oklahoma. During travel between the states, they went to the zoo. And Matt says, because that ends up being where Big Cat Rescue is and Carol Baskin's from, they thought we were some sort of spies. I see. So, okay, so I missed a step in the story. Strange things started happening when they went to the zoo, and Jay Lethal told them he was from Tampa when they asked where they were from. Taven picks up the story and says, because that ends up being where the Big Cat Rescue and Carol Baskin is from, they thought we were spies instead of some random guys walking in without a family like everybody else in this tiger zoo. Oh, my God. You're out for Carol Baskin.
Oh. And then Jay Lethal says, I don't know what that means.
Oh, that's amazing. Oh, 2020 is a hell of a drug. Oh, my God. Stunning. Stunning. My day got better. I'm sad we missed that story on the news. I'm gutted.
Well, before we finish up the show here, we have to introduce our new segment, do we not?
We certainly do. Now, I'm gonna let you do the honors introducing this, because this is something that you brokered with a friend of the show, and I think it's a lovely thing. So take it away, Justin.
Yes, you see, I had an epiphany recently that I don't often recall a lot of these shows because we cover so much and a compressed amount of time. We kind of gloss over stuff. So it's very good that two old fogies like yourself and myself have a little recap at the end of the show, but not just any recap. See, most recaps are just simple words said very woodenly. What if we had someone sing the recap to us and kind of summarize the show for us in a way that's musical and positive? So here we're going to debut a brand new character on the Cultaholic Classic Raw Review, the song stylings of our good friend Strummerwitz.
Oh, Strummerwitz with his recap of Raw. Take it away.
Well, the Undertaker's back in his black and purple getup. Shawn and Diesel caught DeVito with a pretty wicked setup. And Neidhart mauled that jobber, Emma wouldn't let up. Hopes are running high for the Survivor Series. But Dink and Doink the Clown are enough to inspire hate. Atom Bomb's new music makes me think of Phoebe Cates. Macho Man's last match wasn't even in the States. Suddenly, I'm stricken with feelings so dreary. It's this goddamn new generation
where fans tune out and don't bother.
Such a stupid new generation.
Was that really Carmella's father?
We're dreading the new generation.
Jesus, Pittingill, shut your mouth.
Save us from the new generation.
Who's next to follow Hogan South?
Hey! Strummerwitz!
He really encapsulated what the new generation is like.
No, because I liked that. Missed the whole thing. And until we are together again, he is at JRH Writing on Twitter. I am at Tom Campbell on Twitter. Together, we're at Cultaholic on Twitter. Don't forget to join us. Carol Baskin. Love you, bye.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.